Support for WOSU podcasts comes from listeners. You can give at WOSU.org. Thank you for supporting digital content from WOSU Public Media.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The New York Times has called Ann Lamott the lefty guru of optimism. And through her many books, mostly nonfiction and autobiographical, she has written candidly and humorously about motherhood, addiction, love, forgiveness, and loss. And now she's taken on COVID, among other things, and aging. Ann Lamott is a New York Times bestselling author. She's written 19 books. Her latest is titled Dusk, Night, Dawn, On Revival and Courage. Other works include Help, Thanks, Wow, Some Assembly Required, Traveling Mercies, Bird by Bird, and Operating Instructions. So many to talk about, so much to talk about. Ann Lamott, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. I'm so happy to be with you.
I appreciate it. Was this a work in progress when the pandemic hit, or totally inspired by COVID, or what?
No. Curiously, my last book was on hope. I forgot what it was called. Almost everything. Thoughts on Hope. Originally called Doomed Thoughts on Hope, but my publisher wouldn't go for it. And I was traveling around the country back in the day when we did such things. And everywhere I went, people just felt flattened and defeated and scared. You know, the UN climate change reports had come out. People, fires. Remember when Australia was on fire and then California?
Now it's almost underwater, right? Yeah.
Right, because we in California had apparently not raked our forests the right way. And people's dining tables were very, very scary sometimes. I know what it's like to have a kid who's out of control and there's really nothing worse. And so wherever I went, and they shared with me this fear and this confusion, where do you even start to turn your spirits around? So then I started writing this book, and towards the end of it, COVID. So it all became of a piece.
It's not overwhelmingly COVID. I don't know whether you went back through it and kind of read your chapters and thought, well, this is a good, you know, a moment for that.
You know, if it, when it's not COVID, it was something else. And COVID was sort of the, like what was already going on, but on steroids. You know, and I call it COVID college because it really gave us so much information about how to proceed in the night, you know, dusk, night, dawn. I've never felt that we were so much in a night nationally. The nation was torn asunder. The, you know, everything just seemed to be crashing and literally burning. And so in COVID college, though, we learned how rich in compassion we are, if we hadn't known that before. Like, for instance, we saw on the nightly TV these lines of 3 and 4 miles of people outside food pantries just trying to get a box of food for their kids, you know? And we also learned when so little was working anymore and we couldn't go very many places and we couldn't hug those we love, we learned what did work. In COVID college, we learned that we could do the universal sign of the hug across the street from our neighbors, you know, with our masks on. And we learned that if we wanted to have loving feelings that day instead of scared feelings, we could do a bunch of loving things, like get some canned goods to the area in the county where the people, the service people, workers live. And that would change our whole day. We learned what worked. We got quieter. We raced around less like the Ever Ready Bunny. We read more, you know, a dream come true, enforced reading on the couch, which worked for me.
Right.
And so I tried to tell the stories that I thought would be healing and give us all second winds. You know, the great Barry Lopez said once, sometimes we need stories more than food. So that was the evolution of this book.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And my guest this hour is Anne Lamott, New York Times bestselling author of 19 books. Her latest is titled Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. And we'd like to hear from you, listeners. I know a lot of you out there are listening and would love to ask Anne Lamott a question or a comment. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll get to you later on in the program. At the top of the show, I played audio of you reading the first couple sentences of your new book, Dusk, Night, Dawn, and I was wondering if you wouldn't mind kicking that off for us and reading as much as you wish from that as well. From the first chapter of Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage, Anne Lamott.
Thank you. Okay, good. I'll read you like the first page and a half if you've got the patience.
Sure.
Here we are. Here we are. That's the first three words.
Here we are.
That's where the book begins, and that's where the question arises. Here we are, and it's hard. And I'm just interrupting myself to say, we're good at hard. We're good at hard. We stopped smallpox. We've stopped fascism a couple times. We invented the antiretrovirals. My son, who was so out of control, now has 9.5 years clean and sober. Here we are, older, scared, numb on some days, enraged on others, with even less trust than we had a year ago. The devastating pandemic and the federal government's confused and deadly response was simply the final straw to a few years of crushing developments. A UN report on climate catastrophe was published months before my wedding in 2019. The report of the extinction of 1 million species just 3 weeks after. Major buzzkill. Our poor country has been torn asunder. I await the reign of frogs. And I've gotten so much less young. I got Medicare 3 days before I got hitched, which sounds like something an old person might do, which does not describe adorably ageless me. I mostly love being in the third of my life, as it is the easiest that life has ever been, except for, well, the bodily aspects and the dither and fogginess. And I wouldn't go back a year, well, maybe back 2 years before the UN reports, which have changed everything. I hate to be a downer, but now what? Where on earth do we start to get our world and our joy and hope and our faith in life and itself back? So that's the theme of Dusk, Night, Dawn.
That's Anne Lamott reading from her new book, Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. I've heard from all kinds of your fans since I mentioned on social media that I'd be talking with you today. And, you know, everybody has their favorite books or remembers when they read the first book for the first time kind of a thing. I certainly do. And they said it helps them to read your books. Does it help you to write them?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, the writing, the daily writing helps me a lot. I'll tell you, I've been teaching writing for 35 years or something now, and I've told all my students, they all think that they will hand in something for me to read, and I will rush it to my agent, and the agent will make a book deal, and the book will probably come out in the fall, and then they will become wealthy, and then the self-esteem will arrive soon after, and of course the large checks, and then they will get a house with a pool and a drawer full of fish forks. And I tell them, if that happened, which it never has once, I mean, it was my sixth book was Bird by Bird, and that was when I first got to stop doing other jobs like teaching tennis and cleaning house. But I tell them that all that they're looking for, all they long for, self-respect and imagination and a creative life, is it's going to be an inside job. And the way they're going to get that is by sitting down 5 days a week, keeping their butt in the chair, and writing a little bit, writing whatever they can. I always had them get a 1-inch picture frame and put it on the desk, and just squint at the 1-inch picture frame until they could see one passage, one memory, one vision. And just to capture that, to keep things really small, that's where the title Bird by Bird comes from, and let themselves do it really badly. So the telling of these stories, the sitting down and writing them to you and to anyone listening is so healing for me, because I remember what we've come through before. I remember, and in COVID college, we really got to see what still works. And that's what these stories are about. And these stories were about where you find, how you remember, how you envision, how you bring forth what will light your path one day at a time. So yes, very much so. And for people who might be listening who are either stalled out on their own writing projects or haven't begun yet, the writing is where the action is.
I loved it. Someone asked you about, I can't remember now where I read this, but about if it's harder to write novels or to write your memoirs and your autobiographical pieces. And you said that you were taking a lot of notes for your next novel, but that can take years, and that there is a lot to be said for being able to pound one out in a year and a half and feel all the good stuff from that.
There really is. The funny thing is that I very rarely know what I'm doing next. I'm always, you know, I've been in recovery, Clean It Sober, almost 35 years, and I was taught early on, it's one day at a time, and you don't need to know what you're doing next. Just try to find out for yourself, in your heart, or maybe talking to your best girlfriend, what the next right action is. And, you know, my favorite line before my dad's, which I'm not going to tell here, but the bird by bird line, just take it bird by bird, is something the great novelist E.L. Doctorow said, which is that writing is like driving at night with the headlights on. You can only see a little ways in front of you, but you can make the whole journey that way. Wow, what a concept. I mean, the American way, the way I was raised, the way I was schooled, was that I should know what I'm doing and I should get to work doing it, and I should do it as perfectly as I can, you know. And I've never told my students that. There's a whole chapter in Bird by Bird on breaking through the perfectionism, but most of Dusk Night Dawn is the magic and miracle of doing things less perfectly, doing them afraid, you know. Just doing them, making more mistakes and messes, and you know, wasting a little more time, staring off into space like a cat. There are no grown-ups who are going to come by at the age of nearly 67 and say, Annie, don't you have something to do? You know, is your room clean? They're going to say, hi, what are you doing? And I'm going to say, I'm just kind of thinking about things. And I'm going to get back to it.
That is Anne Lamott. She's a New York Times bestselling author of 19 books. Her latest is titled Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. And we're going to continue our conversation. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Handing off the climate crisis to the next generation is much on the mind of writer Anne Lamott. In her latest book, Dusk, Night, Dawn, on Revival and Courage, she offers this advice. The young should not be mean to us because our hearts are good and we are trying to get them a decent government. We show up for marches even when our feet hurt. She concludes the passage this way, and we know all the words to the great protest songs, which is so true. Still with us, author Anne Lamott. Her latest book is faith-based collection titled Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. Anne, thanks again for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
I love being here.
You write about your shiny new husband. I don't know how shiny it is anymore.
Who's still asleep, by the way.
Well, it's early.
It's early in California, and he's still asleep.
Yeah. Well, I reiterate, thanks for being with us on that score. You married for the first time at 65. I was 35 when I married, and that was considered old at the time. You write about him a lot. It's really fun. What's the relationship between you and writing about your husband and all of that? How does he feel about it?
Oh, he loves it, because I only write mostly sweet things, except, you know, I write a number of times about what a know-it-all he is, and he knows that, and he thinks it's funny. I mean, he really, whenever he starts knowing it all and correcting me, I say, Neil, very gently, you have a disorder. You have a problem. But he's very brilliant and literary. You can read about him and about his book at shapesoftruth.com. He writes about a lot of the same stuff I write about in this book, which is about the inner critic. His work is really quieting the inner critic. I call it the governess. My governess dread as I was growing up, and how often, even now, I my default place is to go to dread, and how I've started breaking through that and going to a belief based on a lifelong experience that life supports me and people love me as is. But yeah, I got married 3 days after I got Medicare.
Yeah.
And of course, I forgot to go to the gym after I had the baby 31 years ago. So, but it's you know, I've been married 2 years, and one of them in lockdown. So it's been what we call in recovery, life on life's terms. And some days it's been a little bit lifey. And but as you'll see at Shapes of Truth, he has this trippy, very positive way of looking at things, you know, so that, for instance, there's a line in my book that I stole from him, which is that all you need to know about life and the divine and how to proceed, you can learn again and again in a 10-minute walk through the neighborhood, which is that people are sweet and good. People are observing here, they're observing the rules, they're in masks, they're 6 feet apart. Nature is a prayer. You know, my old pastor used to say that you could trap bees in a mason jar without a lid on, with a drop of honey, because the bees just walk around bitterly, bumping into the glass walls of the jar. They don't look up. All you have to do is look. All they have to do is look up, and then they can fly away. And so Neil and I both talk a lot about looking up. Go outside, look up, pay attention. You don't look up and go, wow, it's kind of a medium new moon tonight. Or you go, wow, oh my God. And wow is the third great prayer, you know, after help. And thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So some days are just too long, whether you're newly married or not. And most days he's really easy to get along with, and I'm incredibly easy to get along with. And we both have our own offices and our back caves. And then when conflicts arise, which they will, we both have these kind of battered old toolboxes of things that work, you know, that telling the truth works. And for me, sometimes, and very rarely, I need a good cry. And, you know, I was raised by an English woman, and I was raised that if you cried at the dinner table, you got sent to your room without eating. This is very 50s, and I think mm-hmm. I might be older than you.
No, not
but,
much.
No,
I get to get, but, if you can't stop crying, leave the table. I know, I hear you.
But I found salvation at 16 in the first issue of Ms. Magazine, and that was like my spiritual salvation. And the women there around our bowls of lentils all told me to be angry, that anger was the way home, because it was truth. It was real. It was what was really going on. And they told me to cry. And I learned that if I cried, I wasn't going to get sent away from the dinner table anymore. I was going to be washed and hydrated and baptized. And it was going to water the new seeds in the hard dirt at my feet. So Neil tolerates it, not welcomes when I cried. He made me cry on our second date. But you have to read Shapes of Truth to find out why. But because he helped me connect to what was going on beneath this position I had taken that was causing me a lot of pain. So the short answer to your question is I'm really, really, really grateful and amazed that at the ripe old age of that God or life put me and Neil together. And some days, as I said, are just a bit too lifey for me.
You made some reference in the book at some point to being middle-aged, and whoever you were talking to said, really? You think you're middle-aged? But I get
late
how you
middle age. Late middle age.
Yeah, late middle age, but whatever. I mean, I get that. It's really an internal feeling, though, about how you feel about yourself. It's not, I don't know, this whole obsession with chronological age. It's kind of a downer.
Yeah, it is. And now I was just walking around the other day, and spring has really sprung here in Northern California, and it's warm. And I love it. And everything's blooming, you know, and I'm seeing daffodils everywhere, which always make me laugh if I'm paying attention, because they're like they were. They're funny little red, yellow and orange clown frills, and they have those big schnozzes. And I'm also seeing, if I'm paying attention, a small miracle, which is the new green shoots breaking through grout and even concrete. And then at the same time, I was thinking to myself, oh no, warmer weather means crop tops, you know, and spring break, and then summer, and all everybody's kids come home from college, or the teenagers all hit the street, and they're all in their crop tops. And I'm not really a crop top kind of woman. And so, and I'm very aware then that that I've gotten old, and I've gotten a lot older. And but as you know, in your extremely late middle age, there are just so many, you know, the book was originally called The Third Third. And it was like calling my hope book doomed, Thoughts on Hope, that the publisher thought it wasn't a great selling title. But it's like what you start learning at about 50 is what I was in it for all along. That what my butt and thighs look like are like 187th on the list of what matters. You start realizing all this crap you've carried around for decades in your psychic airplane that has kept you flying so low, barely grazing the treetops on some days. And you feel like by 50, you've lost some friends, some young friends. You realize that none of us knows how long we're here, and you really better get serious about what matters to you and about living each day as fully as you can. And you start letting go of some of this stuff in your airplane, and so that you can fly a little higher one day at a time. And you stop caring so much about what other people think about you. You realize, weirdly, they get to think what they think, and you're probably not going to change what they think. You get to think. And you also really move into, I think at 50, move into the realization that Earth is forgiveness school. And you look at the people that you haven't forgiven yet. I mean, for me, entire administrations and my Aunt Blanche, you know, who had a way of always hurting my feelings at holiday dinners with her positions on either my weight or what I write about or my political ideas or whatever. And you start to think, I love her. She's family. And I'm going to call her today because I know she's very, very lonely. You learn by 50 that if you want to have loving feelings, you do loving things. Now, forgiving my aunt doesn't mean I want to have lunch with her Friday you know, 6 feet away in an outdoor parklet, it just means I'm done. I'm just done. And I'm going to let my heart be softened. And I'm going to call her and I'm going to say, how are you? I'm so glad to hear your voice. And if I take that action, the insight will follow, which is I'm too old to carry this around for much longer. Enough already.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That is author, New York Times bestselling author Ann Lamott. Her latest book is titled Dusk, Night, Dawn on Revival and Courage. If you have a question or comment for Ann, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. No, Ann, yeah, we're very close in age, and all of that stuff is a thing, particularly the feeling like growing up, for me, a little like I'm just a few years younger than you, just that post-60s thing, going into the 70s, mid-70s, into college, when everything was sororities and fraternities and everything, nothing against them personally. But it was went from this kind of 60s vibe of peace, love, dove to, you know, everyone was wearing the same jacket. Everyone was wearing the same duck shoes. Everyone was wearing the same everything. And it was seemed such like such a rigid transition. And you thought, or maybe we thought, we changed the world. And the world changed. I don't know how much
Change the world. We did change the world. We stopped the war in Vietnam. We have now moved into this incredibly rich period of facing climate change. Finally, we have amassed and shared with the younger generation the greatest trove of scientific data in the history of the world. We do change the world, and we just have to not give up when we feel overwhelmed by a bad day on TV when we're watching the glaciers, calves, baby glaciers, or watching the polar bears. You can either be defeated by it, and we weren't in the 60s and the 70s, and a few months ago, a year ago, when we marched. My husband marched with a mask on with the other old people who were in the very back of the marches, 6 feet away. You take the action and the insight will fall. Or as Molly Ivan said, freedom fighters don't always win, but they're always right. So you march. You know what I did have been doing during COVID college is every day I thought, how can I serve the poor today? How can, you know, I stop off at Safeway, I fill bags with canned and powdered goods and Oreos, the communion element of COVID. I send money to foods. I send $10, I send $50 to food sanctuaries. I send them to whoever most tugs on my shoulder that day in need. And so, yeah, we didn't change the world. There's no unicorns and it's not all rainbows. But together we are amazing, amazing. And so I say to the young in that one chapter on climate change, first of all, I always remind them that we have a lot more money than they do.
Yeah, I know. I remember. Yeah.
And we do know all the words to the protest songs, and we will march with them. And my feet hurt every day, and I will put on my coziest, most marshmallowiest shoes with the highest arches, and to my dying breath, I will march or be wheeled alongside them for decency and equality and human rights and climate restoration. We are beginning to turn the barge around. We are beginning to. Join us.
I have an email from Lynn. She writes, in Bird by Bird, you, Ann Lamott, writes, if something inside you is real, we will probably find it interesting and it will probably be universal. So you must risk placing real emotion at the center of your work, right? Straight into the emotional center of things, right toward vulnerability. I wrote like this. And this is now Lynn talking. I wrote like this while recovering from breast cancer. I wrote the ugly, the painful, and the scared. And I wrote as me, not as a mom or a wife. Sometimes I shocked my children. How do you reconcile writing about your life when the truth may change how family members view you?
Well, that's a great question. I literally could write entire books about it. But I'm very, very careful about not writing anything about my family that I think will embarrass them. I run everything by everybody. But you, I've said, you know, you own everything that happened to you. You own everything that happened to you. And if people wanted you to write more warmly about them, they should have behaved better. And if you're writing stuff that is dark, I mean, let me tell you, Lynn, no one in my experience is happy to find out you're writing a memoir. But you get to tell your story. You don't get to tell theirs. And you can't control how they feel about you. You can't. You can only work with how you feel about you, that you were born to tell this story. You know, the Persian mystic Rumi had the most beautiful line. He said, "Through love, all pain will turn to medicine." So in telling your truth about what it was like, not the unicorns, not the rainbow, not the nice Christian bumper stickers, but what your truth, you are going to be able to offer medicine to people who are newly diagnosed. You're going to be offering medicine to people who feel shame because they felt such dark, ugly, quote-unquote, non-spiritual feelings. They felt despair. They felt hate. They lost faith in God or life. And you did too. You must have. I don't see how you couldn't have some days. And yet you wrote about what worked. You know, going to bed for the duration. What always works for me is the latest issue of People magazine and a salad bowl full of Cheetos. You know, what always works for me is picking up the 200-pound phone and calling my best friend's son died 2 months ago. She calls me all the time, but I call her and I say, I hate all of life and everyone I can think of except for you and the kitty. And she says, oh my God, I'm so glad you called. Look, I'll meet you at Target. You know? And then we walk 6 feet apart with our masks on and we buy leftover candy and really cute overpriced socks.
Speaking of forgiving, we have an email from Paul in Reynoldsburg. He says, I enjoy your books, exclamation point. Do you agree with the concept of forgive everybody everything? Please talk about your feelings on this.
Oh my God, that's a wonderful question. You know, so much of Dusk Night Dawn is about forgiveness and how hard it is and how urgent it is that we do the healing around the resentments we still carry and the shame we still feel towards our old actions when we really did do the best we could, as our parents did the best we could, and it's a little disappointing and it was very damaging. So it's hard to answer in a minute or two, but one line I love, and I don't even know who said it, is that we are here on earth forgiveness, forgiving, for offering the white flag to ourselves. I say to myself, Annie, sigh. The sigh is the great punctuation of our lives. I look at the stuff I've done to myself. I look at the stuff I did to other women when I was drinking. I look at the stuff I did to my son. I was poor. I was a single mother. I screwed up right and left, you know, and as Vonnegut said, welcome to the monkey house. And then I do the deep dive into making amends to myself and to those I may have injured or injured, you know, yes, last night. And I push back my sleeves and I see where to begin, you know, and sometimes a lack of forgiveness towards a certain people, for me, old boyfriends, It's like when you're a kid or a girl kid anyway, and you would have a really thin gold chain and there would be an impossible knot in it. And you don't tug and tug and tug, it makes it worse. You lay it down on the table, you push back your sleeves, you sit with it, you jiggle. You maybe poke at it with a push pin. You see if there's any way at all to loosen and unclench that knot. You know, and I'm a Sunday school teacher, I believe in grace. But I believe in grace as spiritual WD-40, you know, and that it's a movement of something that will loosen the clenched and clutched up parts of our lives. All I have to do is to be willing to let God or life or my very best friends put that long, thin red straw in the can of the WD-40 of grace. And then I can spritz the knotted up necklace. I can spritz the knot in my heart where I won't forgive this couple that hurt me so badly 25 years ago. And there's what's it called? Well, there's a thing on YouTube. I don't even a clip, a thing.
Yeah,
let's call it
video. Yeah,
on YouTube. If you Google Carolyn Mace and Anne Lamott, we did this talk about a month ago, and so much of it is about forgiveness. And she said an incredible thing that's changed my life. I told her about this couple that hurt me so much, and how somehow I don't quite forgive them. I kind of obsess sometimes. And she said, you need to call your soul back from that memory. You know, what the gift that they've given you is you get to see this hard, cold place in you. You don't want to walk into your around your third with a hard, cold place. Release them. Thank you for helping them reveal this. If you want to heal it, you got to reveal it and call yourself back from that memory. Now, this sounds crazy, and I don't think God or life have a magic wand, but I was instantly about 80% better. So I hope that helps you with your challenges and forgiveness. And listen to this Carolyn Mace thing with me on YouTube. And you start where you are. You know, it's just like with writing. You start where you are, you just do it. You do it afraid, and you just don't give up. My son Sam has a tattoo on his forearm that says, we never give up.
That's Anne Lamott, New York Times bestselling author. Her new book is titled Dusk, Night, Dawn, on Revival and Courage. If you have a question or comment for Anne, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Anne Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Anne Fisher. We're talking with bestselling author Anne Lamott, whose latest work is titled Dusk, Night, Dawn, on Revival and Courage. We're talking about the pandemic, hope and faith and aging, and how the young aren't mad at us, but that's okay. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My natural inclination in talking with you, Anne Lamott, after reading so many of your books, is to just say, to go to each section and say, this is how I felt about that, like as if. But you did, there was an event you were going to listen to a friend of yours do kind of a spoken essay about growing up in Berkeley. It was a hysterical story that you told about how you were internalizing the event, and it sounded horrible, but still funny, too. You have that way about you. And then the kind of the MC or the hostess took the stage at one point, finally, and you were like, yay, the show's going to start finally. And she looked and sounded like a lot of fun, which I don't like in a person. And that immediately made me think of this lady who led my Smoke Stoppers 2-week quitting smoking thing like 30 years ago. And she was just so cheerful. And I just hated her immediately. I hated her. I hated her strength and her everything, you know, about her. It just spoke to me. Nice people.
It's funny because I love that chapter, and my editor felt like people weren't going to be able to relate to it because I really think I was having a massive panic attack. I'll just tell your listeners that I came to support a friend in a storytelling guild, and I was told that they would be 10-minute shares and she would be first, and they ended up being 15 and 20-minute shares with a 20-minute break in between, at which point audience members were invited up. And I thought I was gonna, I would have chewed off my arm to get out of the trap if I could have. And it's about what grace looked like when it finally arrived. But it turned out that everybody loves that chapter because you've been held hostage at events poetry readings, for instance, where a poet feels it makes sense to read their poetry for an hour in iambic pentameter, and you just want to die. You want to rush to the stage and poke him in the head with a fork like a baked potato, and you just sit there and go mad as a hatter. So thank you for liking that. And
loved it.
It's funny, you know, it's hard some days, and it's hard to be a good sport, and it's hard. And we do the best we can. And if we are patient, grace will tug on our sleeves. The person who tugged on my sleeves was at intermission, and it happened to be another sober woman. And as soon as she said the word that she was sober, I felt like a baby pinking up. You know, I felt like, oh God, another crazy sober sister. And then I was more or less okay again. 80% okay.
Here is an email from Miriam. She says, thanks so much for featuring Anne Lamott. She's been my hero since forever, and I love to tell this story. I hate books. But one day, my favorite boss gave me Bird by Bird, and I read it out of respect, and I loved it. And that same day, another friend gave me Help, Thanks, Wow, and I read that too. And then I decided that I still didn't like books, but I made an exception for Anne Lamott. So, wow. I love books, Miriam. I don't know, but yay you. Let's see. You know, that makes me think of something else I wanted to ask you. The recovering, your life of recovery is always a large theme, and it's just kind of woven into everything. You have to know that some people are drinking and smoking pot and doing whatever and reading your books.
Yeah, I mean, people, a lot of people, first of all, don't have a problem with alcohol or weed or whatever. I call it the non-habit-forming marijuana that I smoked on a daily basis from the age of 13 till 32 when I got sober. But so much of what I learned in recovery was the material I've been searching for all of my life, the spiritual information about living one day at a time, and sometimes living an hour at a time when one day is just too daunting. And I learned that for me, I was going to experience the divine or goodness or God or good orderly direction or grace over drama or whatever you want to call a higher power, most often in quiet or paradoxically in a precious community. And I'm not a community kind of person. I love to be alone. That's why it's so funny I agreed to meet Neil. But if you read the Dust Night Dawn, you'll see I agreed to meet him after he said we could get a cat, which is known now as the cat codicil. But I really love to be alone. And these people, these women that were helping me get sober in 1986, kept kind of showing up whether I wanted them to or not. And they drove around and they shared their experience, strength, and hope. And you know what? They made me laugh about my most awful stories and behavior of the last 15 years. And laughter really is carbonated holiness. And as you know, Trevor Noah said last month, something I love, he said, if you're laughing with someone, you know you're really sharing something. And so people helped me share the weirdness of waking up every morning with a hangover or with somebody I didn't even know or with just total blackout confusion about how the night before had gone. And they showed up and they made me laugh about it. They made me believe that I didn't actually have to live that way anymore. So people are still drinking. Sometimes I'm jealous of that. Although my life began, my second third began when I was 32 and I stopped drinking. So, yeah. People get, you know, people, it's so weird. I have a disease of good ideas for other people, for which there's a recovery program for people who have tiny control issues like myself and who think they have good ideas for almost everyone else, which usually get believe that other people have hidden potential that I alone can see or, you know, that who thinking that other people's lives would be enhanced by, like my son is 31 and I sometimes just wish I could run along beside him on his hero's journey with, you know, juice boxes and sunscreen. And that's abusive. I have to release him to his own higher power, which is not mom, and to his own destiny. And but it's so hard to watch people be in hardship or screwing up right or left. And really all I can do when all is said and done is go on to my own emotional acre. Everybody has an emotional acre. And I have plenty of mess on mine. You know, like we were talking about the people we don't forgive, the resentments we've been keeping mm-hmm. all along. And I can create a beautiful garden on mine. But I don't have the right to go onto yours or my son's or my husband's emotional acre and say, I think we should plant flowers here, you know? So one day at a time in sobriety, I've learned kind of pretty much sort of to release people to their own destiny, their own beliefs, their own choices, and to cover my heart with my hands, surrender to my own truth, my own higher power, my own destiny, and try to remember to breathe every so often. I find that helpful. When I don't know what to do, I go left foot, breathe.
On page 101, you write about a woman who, I'm going to very much thumbnail this, felt ripped off when she was at a retreat. She had traveled around the world to attend. And she was ticked that the leader of the retreat wanted everyone to take a nap. And you mentioned these really wonderful Mexican blankets, which I love a good Mexican blanket. Afterward, you know, she was like, this is ridiculous. But she grabbed her blanket and went in the back of the room. And then afterward, she realized she needed it.
It's a beautiful story. My friend Mark Iaconelli is a teacher. He was teaching a weekend workshop on renewal and revival, you know, and how we get second winds. And this woman who was a pediatric doctor in India had flown in for the teaching on renewal and restoration. And late, you know, after lunch, Mark wanted everyone to lie down and take her. And she was furious. She paid all this money and she'd come from halfway around the world. But she did it sort of bitterly. You know, you take the action and the insight follows. And she lay down in the back of the room. And afterwards, she comes up to Mark and she said, I took a nap. I dreamed. I dreamt. I was exhausted. I hadn't even known that. And so I've been writing a lot on Facebook about this sort of existential exhaustion that I think a lot of us find ourselves in after the last few years. And that rest is a spiritual act. You know, and that being of service also fills us up. You know, that's another paradox. All truth is paradox. So between rest and being of service, we do get our enthusiasm, our energy, our confidence in life back. So, but I love that story. Thanks for mentioning it.
I love it too. I mean, I think of all the naps I've taken in the last year, and it made me feel a lot better. The whole idea of the third, I wanted to talk about that a little bit more. I wish the third could go on forever. You know, and I'm just kind of interested in the audiences that you're attracting now. It's got to be spanning all ages and all kinds of walks of life at this point. After all these years, your books often get passed around when people are having their first child, for instance. Who do you think about who's reading your book, who your audience is, if you will, when you're writing?
I really see the audiences that were at my events when I was on book tour for the Hope book. Okay. I see how scared they were. That's why the publisher didn't want to call it the third, because then he thought only old people like us or people in extremely late youth like us would want to read it. But my audiences are really filled with younger people, too. You know, a lot of people in my audiences ran screaming from the churches of their childhood, ran screaming from their temples and mosques and fundamentalist families, because they felt this thing inside of them that I would dare to call God, but you might call the gift of desperation, say, is a good acronym. And where all teaching, all learning begins. But it's really all ages, because we're all in the same boat. You know, we're all struggling. We all lose faith someday. Some days we're all looking for spiritual nourishment. We're all wanting to get our mojo back. So It's funny because I love to have young people, and sometimes people drag their really young people along, like their 14-year-olds or their 10-year-olds, and then I speak to them directly. I say to them, if you, and this is not directed to the woman who hated to read because it sounds like she does secretly and furtively read a little. But anyway, I tell the young people, say, if you want to have a great life, learn to read more and more challenging books and more and more books that thrill you, books that you can get lost in, because if you can make the habit of getting lost in books, that is how I personally got found. You know, from Pippi Longstockings all the way to the Barbara Kingsolver I'm going to crawl in bed with tonight.
Anne Lamott, New York Times bestselling author, her new book, Dusk, Night, Dawn, on revival and courage. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Ohio.
That's it for All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.